Hey guys, welcome to another Crypto Sparta podcast episode. We're just gonna knock it right out and get into the market. It's a little after Christmas, so just gonna jump off with the Santa rally.
Yeah, so we called it, Daniel called it last week, that since we had a little correction and we had this little Santa rally, Bitcoin, you know, it's been kind of chopped, like we kind of said before. Hovering around,
it's
like
holding 50.
50, yeah, basically holding 50.
50,
it's at
hopefully,
1,000 right now.
It will never be below 50 again.
Yeah, ETH has like been hovering around 4,000 for this
nice
week.
Round numbers.
It's been pretty flat, like,
yeah, it's crab, like, it's not, there's not too much volume.
And that was like kind of expected, like we kind of said last week, but you know, there's definitely like a bunch of altcoins that kind of bounce back where it's like you kind of got that sigh of relief where it's like things aren't crashing and things aren't like gonna go any further, where it's like we've hit the end point of this kind of correction where it's like there's a little strength and it's got us really excited for 2022. Like, you know, time dipped from like 5,000 down or 8,000 at its like beginning November, and it dropped down to like 3,000 at its lowest last week, and now it kind of recovered back to like 4,200. And like, you know, there are definitely other altcoins that have bounced back too.
Yeah, and we had talked about in our notes, Luna's over all time highs now.
Matic. Yeah, Matic is at all time highs back to when it was in May, which is kind of rare, or like for, you know, certain coins.
Yeah, completely recovered for altcoins is like not necessarily the story for, we're not seeing all-time highs across the board.
Yeah, for every single altcoin.
But yeah, we've seen Time and Ohm are like bouncing back, the rebase tokens. And the other news that we had was the airdrop for SOS.
Oh yeah, so it was kind of an eventful Christmas. We've talked about OpenSea a lot on this podcast and how successful it has been. But they kind of, you know, how they're growing their company has kind of taken a kind of different turn, where there's reports saying that they're going to go the IPO route, similar to Coinbase, instead of like, you know, the crypto route
ICO.
Where they just like airdrop you tokens or whatnot. And, you know, since that report that, you know, they're not going to reward OpenSea users and they're going to go the IPO route on NASDAQ, a Pudgy Penguin holder.
9x9x9x9 or something.
Yeah, he created an SO. It's the token's called SOS. And it's basically like if you've transacted on ETH or on OpenSea, and you've like, you know, paid ETH for an NFT, like it would reward you for how active you've been on OpenSea. And so I, you know, me personally, I haven't been as active as others, but like I've definitely like, you know, played around with it. Like I've bought about a couple, like probably like three NFTs on OpenSea. I think, and the cool thing too, they like summarize your usage, and it's basically weighted usage where it's like based on how much you traded, how much fees OpenSea took from you. And you know, I only did like three transactions, or about three NFTs, and I've made, or I probably spent like, you know, 1.5 ETH, and I ended up getting like 5 million SOS tokens. Which at the time it was been pumping, it was like 600%, so 6x, and it's kind of been, so that was like $50 at that point. I think Daniel transacted more on ETH.
Well,
or
I,
on OpenSea
when
than
I claimed it, I got around 250, and then it ended up pumping, which but was interesting. Like, where everybody got airdrop, and you assume. Kind of
well,
like with
what
the
was
Ash
your
Dog thing.
It was more than 5 million.
I got 36 million.
Yeah, since you bought and sold, you actually sold your Pudgy Penguin on OpenSea.
Yeah.
You sold your Mooncat on OpenSea. So it's been, so you definitely got more. But
I'd heard Keyboard Monkey got a 500,000.
Yeah, people who are like
deep in the NFT game got a lot of money.
People who bought, you know, art block pieces or Pudgy Penguin or Bored Ape Yacht Club pieces. They got six-figure airdrops.
No, and some people were talking about how they paper-handed the airdrop because it ended up 10xing in like a day.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't even pay attention, and then I got in late, like 10 hours into the airdrop.
Yeah, people were able to claim like Christmas Eve, and I think throughout Christmas Eve, like we were getting obscure things on our timeline about SOS, where it's like
I was like, what does this even mean? And then everyone was saying SOS to a dollar is FUD, and I mean the token supply.
I mean, the token
now makes 36 million, and it was worth 250 bucks.
So someone did the market cap thing where it's like, you know,
be the market cap of the entire world.
If it was market cap of SHIB, what would it need to be? And I think it was 0.0087.
There's so many point zeros on this thing. The unit bias is just like people are like, oh, it's cheap. It's hilarious.
There's five zeros on it. But the thing is, the market cap has like gone up crazy. So it's a top 300 coin already in like just, you know, a couple of days. And so the market cap went from nothing and now it's like 240 million. The market cap right now is, you know, 300. Wow. And we don't know the utility of it. It's just been so far rewards token for people transacting on OpenSea. And so,
but I think that they're it's from the Open DAO, and I think what they're looking to do they're looking to do a decentralized OpenSea.
Yeah, so the guy from, he's a Pudgy Penguin, he owns one of the rarest
banana penguin.
yeah, so
I posted a tweet where it was like yeah, normal Christmas, you know, like a penguin just gave me enough money to pay for all my Christmas presents. So
looking off the SOS website, which is theopendao.com, you know, 50% airdrop to OpenSea users, 20% staking incentives, 20% OpenDao, and then 10% LP incentives. So, I don't know. I think...
No, and then there were some people being like, I sold my airdrop for 0.5 ETH and it would have been 7 ETH. Like, this thing just mooned. And I'm very curious in terms of the mentality. Who's buying airdrop tokens?
Well, yeah.
Some people are smart, I guess. Who's
buying SOS? Like, if you didn't get an airdrop because, like, somebody made, like, a 300 ETH purchase on, and the volume has been insane. Like, the volume has been, like, over 250 million. On the volume.
I'm like, yeah.
And it was funny too because all these exchanges started listing it. Like, it immediately got on KuCoin. Like, got on Bybit. Like, it's on SushiSwap. It's on Huobi.
It had to be
Bybit.
There had to be some background. Like, this had to be planned for quite a while.
Like, it's over like 100 million in volume. Like, and this has been, and this is after like a pullback.
And it's airdropped. A lot of people just sold it immediately.
Yeah, so it's
like been, there's so much sell pressure.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's been pretty level, right, since that sell point. Damn. But it's been a top 300 coin. It's bigger than Urzo right now, as far as market cap. And like, you know, top 300 coin is no joke. So it's kind of funny. I mean, our value isn't much, so it's like. The thing was is that the gas was surprisingly cheap. Like, it was only $12 gas.
Yeah. They did well on that part about it.
I don't know how or, like, what. So, it's, like, I only got 50 bucks worth.
But there are so many people, and, like, I think it was Keyboard Monkey as well, who had said, I will make it my – they made it a copy pasta where people were copying and, like, pasting that as their tweets, where he was, like, I will make it my mission – to use this for everything I hate OpenSea. To
being selfless or something.
Yeah, like...
To make other people money. Yeah. But yeah, whatever.
But it's just like, OpenSea really has given themselves a bag. Yep.
They fumbled the bag.
And then there was someone who had said, this is Blockbuster not offering Netflix a buyout. Like, OpenSea had the chance to make their own coin. and then somebody else did it for them.
Well, that I think it's also showing that they're more centralized, right? Where it's like they're going the centralized safe route,
yeah,
instead of going the Web 3, you know, fully decentralized route. And I don't know how, you know, who invested in OpenSea or like who, what are the VCs behind it, but I think that goes to another discussion.
Where it really is confusing because where does the liquidity come from?
With the,
like they launch this coin and then if you want to sell it,
yeah,
you can sell it for money. Where did the money come from?
Yeah, is it truly decentralized if, you know, you have like a couple VC investors influencing it and that whole majority of the tokens?
And well, that's kind of leads into one of our other topics that we had planned about where it was like,
yeah, with
Jack Dorsey. Yeah, has a bone to pick with Web3 VCs.
Well, since he stepped down, I mean, it's kind of like love-hate where it's like...
Jack Dorsey stepped down from Twitter so that he can use Twitter.
Yeah, so he can actually like ship posts on Twitter. So basically the kind of thing was is that like he was kind of shitting on Web3 and how you can't truly have a Web3 if you have all these VCs that hold all tokens. And it's not truly decentralized, you know, which is somewhat kind of true, but it also, you know, poses the question to where, you know, that's how Twitter was founded, right? With like all these VC, Silicon Valley.
Investors. Yeah. And then people are just like, Jack, who hurt you? Like,
yeah.
Oh, he didn't get in on the Ethereum early round, like pre-seed staking or something.
Well, he's choosing to build Bitcoin, which is also
kind of... He's like a Bitcoin maxi. It's so cringe.
Yeah, it's a... I don't think... What's that term where it's like overworked, but there's not much growth there or whatnot? Or where it's like you can put a lot of work in and, you know, the gains won't be
well, there. And he talks about what he wants to turn Bitcoin into. He's like, bro, there's already Ethereum.
You know, Lightning, I mean, all you can do basically is optimize the Lightning network and, like, make it scalable. But he's trying to do, like, other stuff, like smart contracts. No,
there's the memes where it's like, it's like, oh, wow, you, it's like the how-to book, the guy who's, like, reading, like, yeah. There's, like, the book is like, how to integrate Bitcoin to
Web3.
To DeFi. And then you open the book and it's like, wrap it onto the Ethereum network.
Yeah, it's very, that's what it is basically. But it's fun that we have a more active Jack Dorsey on Twitter, and I think a lot of people had you know, expressed their opinions and that sort of stuff. You had like Ari Paul, you know, people, you know, VCs who invest in stuff speak out. And I think it's not like Jack Dorsey's completely wrong. I think there's just like, if you think about it from, you know, a VC point of view, is like you're taking a lot of risk to develop a project. Like you can't just give them free money and you know, do whatever.
And it's weird because he like talks about centralization and like how like it's like controlled by VCs, and it's like, you're the CEO of Twitter, like you're the...
Yeah, you should know how this works.
Yeah, like that you are the poster child for centralization, and like we don't even need to get into like the censorship and all that stuff.
But yeah, so yeah, Ari Paul spoke out. He's been out Up Only, co-founder of Block Tower, and he spoke up about it. Like, you know, Web3 right now is not Web3, right? Because it's like there's a lot of bugs. It's pretty centralized, like same with Solana right now. So like,
I mean, web, yeah, Solana is super centralized, and
there's a lot of risk in building. It's like, it's not like 100% like safe, like especially in the crypto space, you're taking on risk. And you know, if you expect VCs to point out give out money, there's gonna be risk involved, where it's like if they hit, they should, you know, gain some rewards in that degree. And that's just, you know, capitalism.
It's almost like kind of like an interesting thing too, where it's like you have like the comparisons of who's putting your money into what, and then some people are like, oh, VCs are evil, you know, they always get the good deals and they dump on like retail. But it's also like, okay, VCs are like sophisticated investors. Apparently, the average cryptocurrency holder holds a token for 4 days.
Yeah, 5 days or something. And there's a
funny then if you're like a founder, like you don't want fair weather fans and people that are just gonna do in a low time frame. Like, why didn't it 10x? Like,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of those guys in on crypto Twitter. But it's also funny. There's a meme where it's like the pipe and it was flooding, and then you had the one guy.
He's drinking everything, drinking and then there's some drips,
it, and yeah. Then there's a drip along the way, and that's like retail investors. So it's like the big guy is the VC, and the small guy just getting the crumbs is the, you know, everyday person,
retail investor.
And
but then the interesting thing too is also where it's like, well, everybody starts as a retail investor, probably, unless you're like a professional. And then it's like, okay, so when do you turn into a VC and people start hating you? Like, when does Suzu get so rich that you...
How much money do you have to make in order to...
What's the difference between an angel investor, a retail investor,
and
a VC?
And someone who has, like, it's just like how many zeros? 10 figures.
Yeah.
Like, personally. And so, you know, that gives... rotates into another topic of like DAOs and how, you know, DAOs operate and, you know, decentralized, you know, organization, how should we build out that Web 3.0, right? You know, we don't want it too centralized, you know, but also there are issues with DAOs and, you know.
Well, and we were talking about like with Olympus where, I mean, yeah, everybody, if you create, you know, governance tokens where everybody has a one vote, people can monopolize the tokens.
Yeah, it's like, no, well, it's weighted, right? It's weighted on the percentage of, you know, the governance token you have. So obviously the person who has, you know, 100 million, you know, GOM versus somebody who has like 0.1, if they vote yes, that has a higher weight than the guy who... with 0.1 votes yes.
Yeah.
So it's still that like whale mentality where it's like the more you own, the more power you have within that DAO. But also the thing about DAOs is that it's powerful where it's like it's easy to mobilize, easy to have that, you know, decision making process where it's like immediately you have 51%, you know, you go, you mobilize. And so the thing about Ohm too that's kind of amazing is that, you know, they were able to, you know, through a DAO, they were able to have, you know, $3 billion worth deposited into their treasury. Like $3 billion are like $3 billion worth of like people, or like people who have $3 billion decided to trust this thing and like pool our money together and stake. And like that kind of like, and being able to mobilize or create proposals to what to do with that money too is also very powerful.
That was like the guy from Maker in Portugal. He was like, I want you to be a validator that votes on stuff. And it gets into a tangled thing where being like, you know, voting on certain things for certain tokens that are really important or that do serious stuff is like a full-time job.
Yeah.
And then the interesting thing is, do you want the average Ohm holder to actually have a say?
No,
and they're not even
going to
pay attention about that. Yeah, I don't want to vote every other day on these like little finicky. If you've got a couple hundred dollars, you don't need to approve of, you know, some sort of purchase or some sort of liquidity.
Yeah, it's more of like if you're making me money, then I'm okay with it kind of deal for like the everyday normie investor.
So, I mean, yeah, the flip side of this is like we've been watching some Daniele Sesta videos and like, you know, benevolent leader. Is centralization so bad? This guy's clearly like a DeFi insider and he's creating
knows,
a whole ecosystem, yeah. And like, okay, in Daniele we trust, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So there's kind of like a gray area. I think like Kyla Scanlon, the TikTok, she does like highbrow like fintech TikToks, which is like humor. And like she had her Substack or newsletter recommend to follow. But she kind of said where it was kind of like there's a gray area between, you know, fully being a DAO and then fully being, you know, a centralized entity where it's like it's probably good to be like centrally decentralized, you know, where it's like you have like a core similar to a C-suite type of people making decisions, but they operate in kind of a DAO, instead of having like, you know, a CEO having all the power, has the final say. So it's like kind of the C-suite makes the all decisions and then relays that to the everyday person. Yeah, so there's definitely like different discussions about like, you know, how to be fully decentralized, or if you can truly be fully decentralized. Because I know, like, for example, Sushi, you know, Joseph DeLong, he was on Up Only in like September, and then he stepped down in December. And like, if you watch that episode, he was like kind of demoralized, where, you know, Sushi operates totally as a DAO, where it's like there are all these like, you know, skilled people who are developing it, and they get paid in a decentralized way too. Like they use a decentralized like payroll mechanism. But he kind of, there's all this infighting, you know, in between Sushi and the rumors. And so he ended up stepping down as a de facto CTO, and there was like the founder left a while ago, like Chef Maki, and then another person who took control left, and so there's like a kind of a power grab, I guess. And as far as the DAO is considered, you know, everything is up for grabs, and it kind of just kind of, it's kind of a decentralized M&A, which is like a merger and acquisition. You know, he kind of wanted a C-suite type of leadership thing. And then he kind of just was tired about the infighting and decision-making and thought there should be some leadership. And then, then Danielle Sesta made a proposal, and it's kind of incorporating the Sushi into the whole Frog Nation ecosystem, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, we were reading and talking about it, how the ecosystem is like growing, and then really the plans that he has for Sushi in terms of having an exchange that also is an automated market maker like FTX's. Options trading requires someone to be the book, so they'll sell you options in the future. FTX, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried, they have it so that you can bet on, okay, I want to buy an option for Bitcoin at 100,000 in 6 months, 10 months, a year. You know, December 2023, I can buy options on Bitcoin and futures. And then if you get above the strike price, okay, cool, I have an option to buy Bitcoin at 100,000, but it's 200,000. Sweet. And then you pay a price for those options, but someone has to decide that. Daniele Sesta is saying that they're going to create a decentralized automated market maker. And then he also wants to do not only futures contracts, but he wants to do all this liquidity stuff across chains.
Well, yeah, and it's combined with everything that he's already created, like
the stablecoin, magic internet money.
Popsicle, Ice Finance,
Abracadabra, Spell. So it's LP pooling. And then also he had said Wonderland. And I mean, there's a meme, or I mean, not a meme, like
it's a photo. It's Venn diagram.
Yeah. Of like really how this ecosystem is really supposed to. And he's talking about how the bonding program and how much money that they make, and then passing on those earnings is like what really.
Yeah, so there's a tweet where it's like a summary of what's next for Frog Nation. You know, Sushi Swap, and they already approved the, you know, Sushi Swap proposal. So, you know, Danielle, he is incorporating Sushi into his, you know, Wonderland or Abracadabra ecosystem. So, you know, Sushi Swap is going to be the multi-chain AMM, which is the automated market money maker and DEX. And then, you know, Abracadabra, which is Spell, will allow liquidity to be deployed across all meaningful pairs cross-chain, you know, be lending and leveraging, or like using things as collateral. Three, Popsicle will leverage and tech will allow to execute always at the best price, min pairs relative to any other market, and then Wonderland will funnel growth and invest earnings from the ecosystem. So if you think about like those things, you have ICE with the LP pools, and that kind of funnels into the, you know, AMM or DEX, where it's like you need liquidity pools to provide liquidity to fuel your DEXs and exchanges. And then you have Abracadabra, where you can take out loans and that kind of mechanism. And then Wonderland kind of just, you know, is your reserve currency that fuels everything and that can invest in different kind of things. So it's very positive.
And it really creates like a feedback loop.
Yeah, it's definitely like a cyclical ecosystem where it's like everything clicks together, you know.
And we'd mentioned like earlier where, you know, with the SOS, like where does the money come from? But Danielle, you had been talking about how there's a giant value capture that's happening where a lot of that is just like normally would go in the system. And then, you know, all that value that's being extricated is then being distributed. And it's like, it would be, you know, some organization paying for like office space and like salaries. But I mean, this technology, in my mind, is going to eat traditional finance.
Yeah, this is like the one thing I feel like in DeFi where everything kind of clicks, you know, like...
Because you're like, where does the money come from?
It comes from Wonderland, or like it comes from the LP pools, or like, you know.
But just... like also it comes from like, there's so much savings. There's so much money being wasted right now.
You can do all the bonding stuff too and fuel the DEX. You know, Wonderland fuels the DEX. It's it's crazy where, you know, things in DeFi are starting. I think like the picture is becoming clear about like what you can do, and so yeah, we're pretty bullish, and that's all about a DAO too. It's like they're operating as a, you know, kind of a DAO or like a centralized, decentralized, you know, kind of thing.
I think we can wrap that up and then maybe do our last topic before the shows.
Yeah,
we'll do our weekly NFT update.
Yeah,
and then so this week we got our Pudgy presents.
Yeah, so I think we talked about our back in when they launched, probably like in the summer, I want to say, where, you know, we were kind of bullish on the Pudgy Penguin community. I, you know, paid some ETH to get a Pudgy present because I was priced out a little bit on the floor at that time of the Pudgy Penguins. And so I wanted to be a part of the community. So I bought a Pudgy present, but the thing is that they didn't hatch until Christmas, and so Christmas has passed, and so our Pudgy presents have and then, you know, since Daniel had a Pudgy penguin, he was eligible for,
I got the airdrop,
but he sold it pretty good at a good price, but he missed out on the low Pudgy, so they did a mid-tier drop too.
No, you had to pay for the little Pudgies.
Oh, wasn't a free
drop? It wasn't an airdrop.
Oh, okay. Well, they launched another PFP right before the hatching of the presents, and that was, you know, just miniature Pudgy penguins.
But the eggs have hatched, Pudgy, yeah. And they're rods.
Yeah, they're fishing rods. So I was kind of disappointed. Like,
I'm curious to see though. Like a neonate. So what's interesting to me is we had talked about like Wolf Game, and now there's like. Axie, I mean, there's Axies, Jewel, these play-to-earn games. And so it appears that you need a rod to play this fishing game. And I'm crossing my fingers that maybe you play this fishing game and then it's a play-to-earn where you make money.
Their own token.
A Pengu token.
Yeah, so, like, you know, you do some fish, kind of like...
You catch the right fish. Apparently, some of the rods are more rare, and then like you can catch better fish, maybe.
But the rods only have like two traits, so it's like the like either common, rare, or uncommon, or, you know, different colors. So I don't know. Maybe...
And then we're wondering if you need a Pudgy penguin to actually play the game, or a little Pudgy to play the game. Like, do you need both the rod as well as the Pudgy penguin?
I mean, logically, you need someone to control the rod. in your game.
But at the end of the day, there's a lot of money that they've got on aftermarket sales that could be offered up as incentives to play the game.
Well, yeah, and that's probably the, you know, liquidity for that token, right? Like, they put all the ETH earnings, you know, into a pool, and they create their own Pingu token. And, you know, they create their game where it's like, you know, the amount of fish that you catch, you know, you get a certain amount of Pingu token. And, you know, this is all speculation, of course, but, you know, like, I don't know, hopefully it's a successful, you know, player earn game, because, you know, my
the wolf game, yeah. that dragon game with the wizards and dragon, there's these games where people are playing stupid stuff, but it's interesting where people like DeFi, people like staking, but then if you go next level where you turn it into a video game, at the end of the day, it's really, to me, funny how we're turning DeFi, people prefer it if it's a video game format. And it's like, okay, you're yeah. still like putting money in to make more money at the end of the day, mm-hmm. but people are like, no, but I'm playing a game. And it's like, the games are actually really dumb.
Yeah,
where it's like once a day you like check it. It's like Farmville.
If you listen to like Up Only or something, like, you know, you'll hear like Kobe say there hasn't been a game that's worth playing that's like just for the game that's fun. Where it's like you're playing to a certain degree because of the fact that you can.
But on the flip side, people like it even more because instead of just staking coins on Compound, it's a bit of a game.
Yeah, but
the game isn't fun on its own. Yeah, but
without the
money, if you add money, then it's a really fun game.
Then it adds like,
and then it's like turning into daily fantasy gambling, and like we're just like wiring people's brains to like play these video games to make money.
Yeah, so if you imagine if you actually make a worthwhile game that people want to play, and the earning, you know, it kind of flips the role where it's like earning money is kind of secondary to actually playing the game, and so. You know, that's why I think it will take, you know, I think it will take some adoption with, you know, big name video game companies in order to make a worthwhile like crypto game instead of like having all these people try to build it from scratch. I think you need some sort of partnership with kind of
Blizzard, Ubisoft, like yeah.
It'll get mainstream. Like Call of Duty. Yeah, so for sure.
But let's move on to the shills, and then I think we can do two different kinds, because I was just thinking about it, and I have one that's dumb, but let's do for the whole year, because it's about to be New Year's. So yeah. For the 2022, for the whole year, what are you betting on? But then also just a regular show.
What am I betting?
And I'll start out. My regular show, it's dumb. And I just am thinking of it just for fun. But BitLord, Crypto BitLord, Australian dude, he's pretty funny. He's big on Twitter, and then he does videos and stuff. He's all about the new shitcoin, Mong.
Mongoose coin?
M-O-N-G, yeah. And then that was like, it was like a dumb meme that was, I think maybe it'll fizzle out. Honestly, it's really not financial advice.
It's a meme coin.
It's a meme coin, but he's like, when the guy was like,
last time.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what about Gerbil Coin beating Bitcoin? And then what happens when Mongoose Coin comes?
Yeah, it was made because of that congressman in the House Financial Committee, you know, was trying to make a point, but ended up backfiring.
But
people created Mongoose Coin in spite.
I mean, that's a silly, dumb one. Honestly, like, I don't even know if it's a real show.
You think
it's
going to be like the... You know, the pop-off of, you know, 2022, like, that's saying a lot.
No, I'm not saying for 2022. So my 2022 play overall is I am going to say that for 2022, privacy coins, because I think that people are going to get more sophisticated. And so I was looking at some Zcash stuff.
ZK
Monero rollups. And like, well, not the ZK rollups, that's a bit different, but no, just privacy coins. And I think that people in the future are really going to get really important as the governments try to crack down and restrict. They will. I think that the privacy coins and being able to move your money, Tornado Cash, I mean, there's a whole list of them that you can look up, and I think that, you know, I don't know if there's gonna be one winner or many, but I think that whole space is going to grow.
as you can tell from, you know, what I've been talking about, I think I'm pretty bullish on, you know, reserve currencies, not like forks, but ohm and time in general. I think you should definitely have, I've been pilling people, I've been shilling it, teller people, getting people set up. It doesn't need you don't need a lot to get in and then have the APY just take over, where at the end you could be, have you can take, you know, a four-figure investment into possibly, a seven-figure investment just by compounding. And I think, like, especially with this whole sushi thing and how, the picture has been clear of what the purpose of time is, not just, you know, a way to, not just a Ponzi to give people APY. And same with ohm, where it's like, you know, they're using the APY as an incentive to, you know, build a currency that is in circulation. And then after that, you know, it can, you know, do more as far as like, it's actually the backbone of it building stuff, where it's like ohm, you know, it could be the dollar of, you know,
anything Daniele says to just bullish. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think right now too, especially, last week it was kind of scary, how it, you know, just dropped from 8,000 to 3,000 in about like a week and a half. But I think it has strong bounce back this week, and I'm just really bullish of this whole ecosystem. And I think time is a very easy way to, be a part of it and have gains too, and like make money and be a frog. And so if you want to do it yet, you know, there's guides out there. I suggest looking at the Green Pill on Twitter. He that's where I got mine from, my guide from. So he's really knowledgeable on how to, stake on these platforms. And so I'm pretty bullish on Wonderland in 2022. But yeah, this is probably the last podcast of the year.
Yeah.
And so
2022, wag me. We're all going to make it.
Yeah, we talked a little about the macro structure of 2022, but I think we're pretty bullish in general on crypto in 2022. You can time the price of the market, like, you know, you can maximize your gains, but I think just buying now proves something that, you know, you're early to some degree, where it's like, you know, I think Suzu like had a tweet where it's like people, overanalyze buying the top and they end up more people sell the bottom than actually buy the top. And over a long period of time, people who buy the top ending out outperforming people, obviously, who sell the bottom. But like the people who sell the bottom,
you can way outperform though, because there will be higher highs.
Yeah, exactly. So like that's the thing, where it's like people sell the bottom because they're trying to rotate stuff, they're gonna cut losses, trying to wash, and you end up kind of sometimes losing more than you
can. Over trading and just
trying to
ride the wave. Yeah.
So, you know, try to keep it simple. If you're interested in a coin, you know, watch the chart and observe it, how it interacts. What helps me is like you just put on your watch list. So it's like you check it. When you check the prices, you check what that coin is doing. And then you can do your research too and look into it if it looks strong. And you can usually tell if it's a strong, if it has like a lot of volume,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the exchange, or like people are trading a lot, you know, good or bad. If it has, you know, a lot of volatility, that's a good thing. Yeah. That means it's like talked about. Yeah, that was our final podcast of 2022 or 2021, right?
Yep.
And so thank you for sticking with us.
Thanks, Nick and Maya.
Yeah.
Deuces.
Hopefully, as same with crypto, this podcast will grow in 2022.
Hey.
So on that note, we're going to end it. Peace.